This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. A few months ago, Branford Marsalis came to our studio, and we're going to rebroadcast that conversation today. He's a world-famous saxophonist, bandleader, and composer. His career spans three decades. He's won multiple Grammys and calls North Carolina, right here in Durham, his home. Branford Marsalis has appeared on more than 80 different albums in the course of his career, and I asked him, of all the genres he's played, is his heart mostly rooted in jazz?
I mean, my heart is in whatever I'm doing at the time. Otherwise, it would sound cynical. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I always return.
You come back to
back
that.
To jazz.
First album, 1984, big year for you because your first album, Scenes in the City, yeah. Right? But you also collaborated with Miles Davis.
Yeah. Well, I really wouldn't call that a collaboration. I mean, it's Miles Davis. He tells you what to do and you do it. It's not my idea of a collaboration. But I was so awed by being there that it worked out better that way. I didn't really have anything to offer at the age of 24 anyway, so it was best that he basically told me what to do and how to do it.
Well, let's hear a little bit. The song is Decoy. It's the album of the same name. Let's listen. That's Decoy from the album of the same name, 1984. Miles Davis, Branford Marsalis at the tender age of 24 on that album. You like that. You were kind
of good. Yeah, it's one of my favorite Miles Davis records of that era. And it's not really because I'm on it. I just think that was, you know, a lot of great players on that record.
Yeah. What's it like to work with him? I mean, are you all in the studio together? Or is that done?
We were all in the studio together. And what he did to me on that song is he put some chord changes on the page and said, play these. So then I started playing them. He said, great, now forget them, which made no sense.
Right.
So I said right. Okay. And then I started playing, and I started looking at the changes, and then he stopped the band, and he took them, and he crumbled them up and said, now play. And in my mind, I was going, we could have just done that from the beginning instead of having me. Okay. But I get what he wants. He wants... Is the biggest problem with chord changes is that once you start learning the chord changes, then it ceases to sound like it's in the moment. It can very rapidly sound like you're a highly skilled person who knows mm-hmm. every scale that works on every chord, and you're just regurgitating a bunch of stuff. And he didn't want to lose the moment, the spontaneity of the moment. I get that now.
What do you think is the value of actually teaching you the chord or saying, learn this and then throw it away? I mean, couldn't you do that without that?
Because my ears are really good, he didn't need to do that for me, but he didn't know that.
I see.
So the whole idea is to get you to learn the form of the song or the sound of the song. And now at this point, once you learn the sound of the song, then you use the chords as a reference point, and he wants you to react to what's going on around you and not to just play the chords verbatim.
So does that mean you actually do play it? It would be different in every performance.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
You have collaborated with others. You've been on other forms and other styles. Of course, jazz is what we know you for. But you are on, you know, Fight the Power, Public Enemy. That's an important song. And there you were again.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah?
It was interesting. The producers, Hank Shockley and Eric Sadler, they have a very interesting way of producing, which is very different than the way that people who are more musically skilled would do it. So there was a kind of anything goes quality to it that was really, really awesome. I played one solo. They said, "Oh, that's too inside. That's too mainstream." Then I played another one that was really kind of angular, kind of the way I would play on the Miles stuff. And they say, "Yeah, that's cool. Now I want you to do one where you just go bananas." And I did one where I went bananas. And I said, well, which one are you going to pick? And they said, all of them. And they threw all three faders up at the same time. And I went, what the? Oh, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, they just have a different way of hearing sound.
And they're mixing it all in. So you're not all together anyway. So you're just doing tracks.
Well, yeah, the track was basically done. I think Chuck D had not really done his final vocal as yet, but everything else was pretty much there.
Well, let's listen to a piece of that one. Public Enemy, Fight the Power, Branford Marsalis. Where were you in that?
Yeah, that wasn't the right mix. That was the single, and it comes in at the very end.
Yeah.
Then there's one called Power Sax, where from the get-go, it's just a million saxophone parts going on.
Play all that. It's got to be a different kind of a way to play and be engaged with the music when you're in a project like that, where it's a sonic experience more than a musical experience. I mean,
for me, all music is a sonic experience. Like the way Miles Davis tried to get me to conceptualize it in 84, most chord changes in music, they're points of reference, and it's about how it sounds. And that's the thing. The sound of the instrument or the sound of the music is what affects people. The information, people are bored by the information and really aren't interested in knowing the information. They just want to be moved by a performance, and that's a sound issue.
Well, for the sake of variety, I want to hear another collaboration that you did. This is Mary Chapin Carpenter. The song is John Doe, number 24.
Right.
And if I were an old man returning with my satchel and pork pie hat, I'd hit every jazz joint on Bourbon, and I'd hit everyone on bass, and after that, they passed me around from one state war.
Branford Marsalis with Mary Chapin Carpenter, the album Stones in the Road, John Doe, number 24. Again, are you in the same room? Are you all doing that together, or are you laying that down
separately? It was pretty much done. It was one of those things. She came on the Tonight Show to do a song, and she came over and said, hey, you know, I got this great song. Can you play on it? Oh, of course. Of course. It's very reminiscent of the way that I was playing when I was playing with Sting on the ballads. So, again, when she asked me to do it, I had a point of reference that I could use. It wasn't just going in cold saying, what am I going to play on this song? Songs oftentimes evoke, for me, evoke memories of other sounds. That's kind of how I negotiate with songs in different groups, in different styles, in different genres, is that most musical groups have musical influences, and the chances are good that You know, there's a Kevin Bacon moment where we all kind of meet at this one point, and then I'll just use that as the basis for what I do on the song.
Well, and that song very intentionally references Louisiana and New Orleans, obviously, and that is so that it might, for you, access personal memories and also cultural memories. I mean, just growing up around all that music has got to make a difference.
It makes a difference, but the song itself didn't really have any cultural references to that sound. So yeah. That playing like Sidney Bechet really wouldn't have worked.
Right.
Or Louis Armstrong, yeah. Or you know, Charles Neville, or none of that would have worked.
Is that a whole separate, I mean, when you play a solo like that, are you a part of the song, or are you just kind of keeping it going, keeping it pretty?
I think that when you're playing a solo like that, it's kind of like writing music for a movie. If the movie's really good, then the music is great. If the movie's crap, the music can't save it.
Mm-hmm.
And no one says, crappy movie, great soundtrack.
That's it.
It's usually when they say, successful movie, oh, that soundtrack is incredible.
Right.
But nobody wants to say, boy, that was a dud movie, but that soundtrack was stunning. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
So nobody's going to say, oh, man, you know, that was a really crappy song, but such a great sax solo. So What I try to do is just I try to play what the song suggests that I play. I play what is required, and the rest of it is just about staying out of the way.
Mm. Talk about playing with Sting. Let's listen to Sister Moon.
Wow.
From the album Nothing Like the Sun, Sister Moon. What's it like to work with Sting?
Well, he's great. He's one of the most prolific songwriters in the history of popular music. Really secure as a person, which is the opposite of a lot of those guys, which is why he could hire a band like Omar Hakim and Daryl Jones and Kenny Kirkland and have us stop him and say, don't play it that way, play it this way. And he goes, okay, I'll try that. Instead of saying, you know, I'm Sting, you don't talk to me that way.
You could actually make recommendations like that.
What's the point of being there if you can't? I mean, what did he hire us for? I mean, if that's what he hired us for. Otherwise, he could have got some studio guys that would have just done everything that he said and done like the rest of these bands. There was I remember Mick Jagger came to one of the rehearsals and he was watching the banter between all of us and it just drove him crazy. And when the rehearsal was over, he looked at Sting and said, how can you stand that? Like, how can you stand those guys talking to you in that fashion? And not that it was disrespectful, but it was just, you know, we have an idea that's better than yours. Mick found that unconscionable.
Yeah, well, so it does suggest it's unusual. That doesn't happen
much. It's very unusual.
Yeah.
It's very unusual. And, I mean, it was a very cool period in my development. I learned a lot of things because I was playing with my brother's band. And which was, I was kind of a jazz neophyte. And the one thing that I couldn't do is end a solo. They would just go on and on. And I could never really, and it was not intentional. I just couldn't find it. And it's very interesting that Coltrane did the same thing I found out later when he joined Earl Bostick's band. He joined an R&B band because there is an amazing discipline to playing a 30-second solo that works. And doing it night after night. So when I finally, when the tour was over and I went back to playing jazz, my solos were more direct and to the point. And
and that's from playing, so the discipline of pop music.
The discipline,
it's got a form,
the discipline of having to make your point in 30 seconds instead of having leeway. It didn't necessarily have to be pop music, but that's one of the only venues where musicians wouldn't get pissed off because they could only play 30 seconds. I mean, I got that. I couldn't play longer than that. But after a year and a half, the discipline of having to do that made everything else better.
So let's listen to one of your Grammy Award-winning albums, this from Contemporary Jazz, In the Crease. In the crease from contemporary jazz, Branford Marsalis, are you pretty happy with that quartet and playing in that venue? And that?
Yeah, the piano player's fellow Durhamite, Joey Calderazzo, is on there. And that was his first record with the band because Kenny Kirkland was my pianist before, and he died in 1998. That song was actually supposed to be on the record, that the last record we did with Kenny. And much to my shock and delight, Kenny and my drummer at that time, Jeff Tane Watts, who are phenomenal musicians, could not figure out the structure of that song. And every time they messed it up, I squealed with delight. Because you never trip these guys up. They would never get tripped up, ever. And it drove them crazy. And we tried the song for about an hour, and I said, I guess we'll have to save this for another record. They're like, no, one more time. I said, nope, we're done. We're done. And you're going to hold this over us forever. I will always hold this over you.
Well, in all of the records that you have made, I said at least 80. Your tribute to me, I think, was the finest moment, and it's really it touches my heart.
Thank you very much, Frank. That was lovely.
Yeah, man.
Sure.
Yeah, I just because you would have made it on your own. You didn't need my help, but thanks
for
the credit.
Thanks for everything. Between you and the goat, I thank you.
I'll tell you that story the next time you're on. Branford, always a pleasure. Thank you
yes,
so
sir,
much,
Frank.
Branford Marsalis, jazz musician. And Durham resident. That's the State of Things for today. Our website is stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Nicole Campbell, Alex Granados, Laura Lee, and Sean Wen. Robin Copley is the technical director. Brent Wolf is the news director. And this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow. Mm-hmm.